This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
Once again, the keyword there being try.
Yes.
A heroic effort is made.
Never achieved, but it's the journey that really matters.
Right. You admire people for the effort.
Right.
Not for the results.
We should probably say who these people are.
Crazy you are. Only doing.
This raises questions.
Can I go now?
Hi, I'm Zach Valenti.
The horrified people in the room are Gabrielle Urbina.
And Sarah Shackett.
And we are here at the No Bad Ideas headquarters
mm-hmm.
to try to turn something, oh, shocking, horrendous, ill-conceived, just all around, why?
Yeah, terrible, perplexing, there are other adjectives, but we can get into it. One of us brings an idea that they have found on the internet that they in some way can categorize as bad and read it to the other two. And then the other two have 30 minutes to take that bad idea and turn it into a story.
And if, gentle listener, you are detecting a gleeful edge on Sarah's voice, it is because today she is the bad idea purveyor du jour.
It's my turn.
So she gets to inflict something upon...
I'm the captain now.
Ooh.
Uh-oh.
No. It's actually, I think, more stressful to come up with to find an idea than it's pre-work. Anyway.
Oh, I'm the opposite way. When I get to bring an idea for you guys, it's a vacation. It's like I feel that Zach and I are in the hot seat right now because we now need to.
I will say one last digression, and then I will read the idea that I have found. I had a thought about bringing an idea from the real world. I know that's not the brief, so I didn't. But there, I was at a store over the weekend, and I was flipping through different RPG books, and there is a system called feng shui, and when I saw it on the spine, I was like, either this is sort of a Asian based fighting game, or it's about competitive design, and either way I want to know more. And the page I flipped open to just had the big bold title just said Magic Cop.
Hey.
And that is the thing that I was like, I want to bring this to them, but I can't.
That's so good.
See, the problem though is that that's not a bad idea.
It's not
that's
a bad idea.
It's just a good idea.
It's just it's slightly bizarre, but I want to know more about Magic Cops.
I want to watch that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm here for Magic Cops.
All right.
Just saying.
We will see how here you are for the idea that I actually have.
Oh, God. Zach, I'm not ready.
I mean, I'm excited. I get to hang out with both of you guys.
Aww. All right.
Well, my joke about being scared is less funny now after that sweetness.
I will give you a chance to be scared again, because guess which state this thing that I'm about to read happened in?
Minnesota.
Nope.
Vermont.
Nope.
Hawaii.
Washington.
Nope.
It's Florida, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, boy.
Oh boy.
Florida man?
It is a Florida man.
Oh, boy.
I saw a couple Florida women stories, but I went with this one.
And before you jump in, Sarah, if any of you guys want to read along.
Oh, I recommend.
Sarah, are there gory pictures?
There's a video in France.
Oh, boy. Well, you can find that in the description.
Look at the show notes.
This is
you'll
from,
find the link.
A Huffington Post article, and the description will be in the link to this particular episode.
Other way around. The link will be in the description.
Yeah. Words. I'm not a writer or anything. All right. So the title of this article is Fred Flintstone, I'm making air quotes with my hands, arrested in Florida for speeding in prehistoric smart car.
Wait, what?
What?
No, hang on.
I'm so confused. No.
There's so many layers.
Wait a moment.
The barefoot driver became unruly and had to be detained, the Pasco County Sheriff's Office said, is the subtitle.
Okay.
All right.
Wait, what? No.
The first... I respect the writer for the first sentence in this article, which is, that's a yabba dabba don't.
Oh, God.
Movie title.
But I just... yabba dabba
don't.
Episode title for I'm this episode.
I'm taking my jacket off.
I know.
That just got too hot.
So I just want to shout out David Moy, who wrote this, because... Well punned, sir. Fred Flintstone joined celebrities in trouble with the law when a sheriff's deputy in Pasco County, Florida, pulled him over on November 4th for speeding in a Wesley Chapel housing development. Police identified the driver as Mr. Fred Flintstone and said that his real name is Don Schwartz. Okay. He was nabbed in a smart car that is customized to look like the foot-powered caveman cars seen in the 1960s cartoon series, according to local station WBTV.
Oh my God.
The sheriff's office said in a Facebook post that Flintstone, a.k.a. Schwartz, quote-unquote, became unruly after being issued a speeding citation. He was later released with a notice to appear in court. The post jokes that the prehistoric smart car was seized and is now part of the police fleet. Quote, this is what...
they just took it.
They took the car. This is what intelligence-led policing looked like in the Stone Age, end quote, said the post, which included pictures of the vehicle and a barefoot driver dressed in Flintstones garb.
Wait.
That is the end of the article, so I will let you ask questions while I set a timer.
Wait a minute.
I'm so confused. So let me get this straight.
Yeah, yes. please straighten it.
There is a man in Florida whose name is not Fred Flintstone.
Not Fred Flintstone.
That everybody knows as Fred Flintstone, because Mr. Don Schwartz went out and customized an electric vehicle?
A smart car.
A smart car. A smart car.
It's a tan smart car.
Oh, the little tiny
ones. It's the tiny, tiny ones. So basically just a body.
That can park anywhere?
Yeah.
So it's a tan car. I'll describe it to you.
Oh, God.
But it has along the axis of the wheels and sort of along the car, it has sort of the log and then rollers on the bumpers. And he was driving. There is a picture of this man standing, looking very disgruntled next to a police officer wearing the full Fred Flintstones costume and no shoes.
No way he didn't plan that. But also, maybe there is a way. Does he just always live his life that way?
These are the questions that you should ask for the next 30 minutes, starting right now.
Wait. But just to be clear, this was a... car powered by electricity.
This was a car powered by electricity.
Gasoline.
Not by foot power.
Smart cars aren't gas.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure they're gas cars.
I have no idea.
I don't know. For sure.
The thing that I am getting at is that this is not a foot powered vehicle.
No. It is not.
There wasn't like a hole underneath him.
That would be a really impressive speeding ticket if it was.
Yeah, this is what I was disconcerted by.
No.
Just kind of.
It was a smart car that has been augmented to make it look like the mobile.
Excellent.
Yep.
I now no longer care at all about the details of this vehicle, as long as it is not actually
foot-powered.
Not foot-powered.
Okay, God almighty.
But now the police have it.
Yeah, so
okay, some of them are electric. It might be an electric car.
This is another question that I have. Are the police in the habit of taking things and just kind of like, oh, this is part of the fleet.
The police
now.
Fleet? That I'm not familiar with.
There
I know
is
impounding.
Civil forfeiture and impounding are things. And they may have seized it for not being road safe.
Yeah, because see, I kind of now just want to write the movie about the like rookie cop that comes in on day one and gets assigned that car.
That's funny.
And
that's
He's like, no, guys, show me like my actual car.
Vehicle, yeah.
And everyone is like, no, you won a very, very particular lottery. This is your vehicle.
And now there's someone out in the town who like is really pissed that the police took his car.
Oh, man.
And he's just like out to get this poor rookie cop who has no idea what he like stepped into. Yeah, like, I am kind of more fascinated by the narrative potential of the aftermath of the speeding ticket.
Than the psychology of how a man molds his life around Fred Flintstone.
Well, right. My mind goes to that Santa movie where he can't stop being Santa.
Oh, the Tim Allen?
Right.
Yeah.
He shaves his beard and the beard grows back. He tries to, like, lose weight, but he, like, keeps gaining it back. And it's like, all of a sudden, you have this guy who's just, like, Fred Flintstone. He's just, he's just pissed because he just, you know, he tried to get a new car and it just becomes this, like, overnight, this prehistoric thing.
And, you know, and it's, and the thing about it is also that, like, you know, Lord knows that, like, I saw and enjoyed a lot of the Flintstones growing up. And I think that Fred is written to kind of be a, like, all in all, supposed to be perceived as kind of this, like, upstanding good guy.
But yeah, he's not as bright as Wilma, as these tropes tend to go.
Correct.
But he's a good guy at heart.
But when you sort of look at it now, and you sort of have someone that is, like, molding their life around Fred Flintstone, it's hard to escape kind of a sense of, like, boy, you are really longing for a time that we are no longer living in.
Indeed.
In about 25 different ways.
Yeah. In a time that never existed.
In a time that never existed. Yeah. And also, but also kind of a, like, that is, like, Fred really lives his life in, with sort of, like, gender values that would have been a little out of date even in the 60s. Like, you know, it's really kind of a, like, even, like, 50s.
Right.
Sense of, what a man is supposed to do and what a woman is supposed to do. And, you know, and, like, I expect to come home and have and have my dinner ready before I go to, like, the lodge and hang out
Florida
with, like, the
prehistoric
boys.
Again.
Oh, God, yeah. Mm. So I find it particularly hard to, you know, to imagine sympathizing with someone that is trying to make life around him look more like bedrock. Because I think that that could be charming for a moment, but then inevitably and immediately you run into...
Unless it's like sort of the year of living biblically kind of a thing. It's like someone is doing a year of living like a cartoon.
As a challenge.
As a challenge.
Sure.
But that is the only... Otherwise, I'm with you. That's the only scenario in which...
Let's put a pin in that, though.
Okay.
But Zach, what have you got?
Well, so I like your cop idea.
Uh-huh.
And then I like that maybe the antagonist, the villain... is formerly Fred Flintstone, now shapeshifter cartoon to dastardly...
Oh my god!
And he's just like a Hanna-Barbera like roulette wheel fits. He's got like a whole costume.
And of course, like, he has all these buddies that are, you know, Snidely Whiplash. And,
exactly.
You like you see him go home and, like, you know, puts off, like, takes off the Fred Flintstone clothes and he opens the closet, which is like a mile long.
It's
just got like the perfect costumes for every single Hanna-Barbera
closet.
Character.
Are you talking about his underground lair?
God.
Oh, God.
So you wait? No. This
it's
is
just an eccentric lottery winner who's just like terrorizing
this
Florida.
The levels of reality between these two people are off.
But also like, he literally, like, if I'm hearing you, he literally has a supervillain lair built into the swamp of the Everglades.
He's got, basements aren't a thing in Florida so much.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. I'll take the gas off of weird.
Like, he's got like the alligator pet circling around.
Oh, the moat.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he could legit have his own private island.
Yeah, right.
But like, here's the thing. Like, I immediately, two things kind of present themselves to me. Well, three things with Sarah's kind of year of living biblically, of like somebody is embracing an idea of, as a challenge, I am going to live life the way that they lived life in the 1950s/60s through the conduit of this cartoon character.
Right. And sort of see what I'm missing from my modern life, what I'm very grateful for my modern life to have.
And that could be an interesting, like, Alexander Payne-esque, Robert Zemeckis-esque.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Comedy of manners.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you don't know what of living biblically is, it was a book first.
A.J. Jacobs, I believe, was the author.
Where a man decided for a year to follow all 613 commandments in the Bible.
To the best of his ability.
To the best of his ability.
Given that a lot of them are
sacrifices and stuff.
And a lot of them contradict other commandments.
Yes.
But it was like, I'm going to live as literally textually as I possibly can for a year.
And it's fascinating.
He made it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, he lived.
Have to stone himself to death for anything.
No. He survived.
All right.
It is a very, very interesting book, and it teaches a lot about how the Bible was written for people who lived in the desert around the year zero.
Right. And not today.
Yes. And
no. And
with any faith, an important part of being someone in a religion is reconciling the ancient origins of your beliefs with modern life.
Right.
I see.
And
I see.
That, you know, taking lessons that are very much in a place and of a time and applying them, finding ways to apply them to your own life.
And finding the spirit
yes.
of the law.
You'll find the
Holy
in the
Spirit,
Shabbos
as it were, rather than the letter
well
of it.
Played. Yes. Well played.
But yeah, so I see that as possible avenue of attack number one.
I see.
Possible avenue of attack number two is kind of the sadder version of that, which is more of a Lars and the Real Girl
sort of
a situation
yeah.
Of someone, for reasons that are unknown, has genuinely come to believe that they are Fred Flintstone.
Ring, ring. Fox Searchlight, we're back.
Right.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, and like he dresses the part and he comes home, like slams the door open. It's like, Wilma!
To an empty house.
To an empty.
I do hope. Yeah.
Right.
Well, no, to a cardboard cutout of a cartoon character.
Wow.
Oh, no,
that is so
very
sad.
Lars and the Real Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And much as in Lars and the Real Girl, probably the people that you are actually following are his son, his brother, his well-meaning neighbor.
Right.
Sort of the person that is taking care of him and trying to...
Yeah, sort of sort through what this is all about.
Right. And probably there is a turn in the movie where you go from this is disconcerting and possibly even disturbing, but it is all happening kind of within the bounds of a home and kind of amongst family, to then all of a sudden he goes out and his like crazy stone age looking car gets arrested, get his car taken away from him. And suddenly he's like in a fight against the law enforcement. And now all of a sudden this thing that used to be a private amongst
right.
family problem is now something that is very visibly amongst the community.
Right,
and
right,
can't
right.
be dealt with as delicately. Yeah.
Exactly. And now all of a sudden, instead of having the kind of like kid's glove, just kind of go along with it a little bit and steer him around the edges, you now sort of have people that are calling out what they perceive
right.
as a ridiculous...
And without empathy.
And without empathy, exactly. Yeah. And option number three is the rookie cop gets the impounded car. There is a man with some powerful delusions out to get the car back.
Or somehow the weirdness of the car allows him to go places and do things that normal cops couldn't do.
Oh, okay.
Oh, damn. They got that Comic-Con caper.
Right. No, it's undercover cosplay.
Yo, I am here for the undercover cosplay movie, though, for real.
Wow.
That's kind of amazing.
What, I mean, so once Alan Tudyk is done with Gunman, that's what he can do next.
I mean, that's a good set piece, though, of like, you know, like these two cops, like 21 Jump Street style.
Oh, Lord,
need
yeah.
to infiltrate Comic-Con. And they're sort of this, like, you know, like, well, what are we going to drive to get there? Like, the minute that we roll up in a police car, it's going to, like, give us away. And then one of the other cops is like, hey, do we still have that thing that we took off that dude, like, a couple of years ago? Like, walk, walk, walk. Lights turn on in the garage. They're like, no! What is that thing?
Oh, man. I'm here for the credit sequence of that movie where you just, like, watch this guy, weird guy get arrested. And you're like, why am I watching this? And you, like, never see him again. But the car comes back.
See, though, I'm kind of like, we're rapidly leaving behind the original material.
Oh, that's fine.
But I am here for the version of Miss Congeniality.
Oh, God.
Where
yes.
instead of you need to infiltrate a, like, what was it, like a beauty pageant?
It
or
was
like a
no, and like, really, a con is sort of this generation's, like, I don't know that people our age pay attention to beauty pageants
yeah.
so much.
But like those cosplay shows.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
they're intense.
Yeah. So yeah, so I am totally down for like the brutish formal football player cop.
Yeah.
And the like hard as nails, you know, needs to prove that she is tougher than everyone else.
Oh
like,
my gosh.
Top rated person from the FBI Academy.
Oh, geez.
Need to infiltrate Dragon Con
yeah,
or something.
Sure.
That's so
in order
good.
To find their, in order to find a perk for something. Good. And once again, we are pivoting so hard away from anything related to the original idea.
I'm
and
fine.
I think that Sarah cares not at
guys,
all.
Guys, guys, guys.
A little bit.
The climax of the movie has to happen in the parade, in the car.
Oh my god.
A car?
No.
We can't
no,
have here, a car chase he, in the middle of that madness.
And here is
oh,
my.
It's so good. Because it's a smart car. It can navigate like spaces.
Yeah, sure.
Right. And like what you want is a visual of a Flintstones mobile chasing after
no.
the car and Back to the Future.
No, 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 no. Guys, here's the way that you do it. Have either one of you guys seen To Live and Die in LA?
Oh, yes.
No.
So famously, one of the like, considered like one of the like, best car chase movies in history.
Yeah.
And like the big set piece.
It's like that and Bullet.
Yeah, like that Bullet, French Connection.
Yeah.
But like one of the big set pieces in To Live and Die in LA is that there's this moment when the cops are chasing the criminals and the criminals, I think it is that, but someone is chasing someone, two cars are chasing after one another.
Yeah.
And the person that's being chased just like has like no options except like, fuck it. I'm going to take this exit onto the LA freeway, except it is going like the wrong way.
Yeah. Oh, so
and so
against
they
traffic.
Go into and so it's an LA. It's a car chase happening in the LA freeway against traffic.
That's brilliant.
It's amazing. It's one of those like
I want to watch this.
You lose yeah. you lose weight watching that sequence
yes,
because
you,
you sweat so much and like you know the muscle
Jeez.
Tension just like burns calories in you as you watch those like 10 minutes of film.
New diet.
I would
or exercise.
I would have it. I would be down if it's. The car chase is happening through the parade, but against traffic. So they're having to like duck and weave around all
oh
of the like,
God.
You know.
See, I want to play that the way Edgar Wright would for comedy and have it happening at 5 miles an hour, which is how it
right,
would actually
right,
have
right.
to
That's
go
it.
Down.
Actually,
it would be,
yeah,
it would be
yeah,
a lot
right.
of like, excuse me, pardon, beep, beep, beep. And I need to get around the DeLorean, excuse me.
Does it beep or does it make like a dinosaur sound?
We can add in dinosaur sounds in post.
Yeah, so So this was going to be my stipulation of I am down to make this movie as long as it can still be called Yabba Yabba Don't.
I don't think you need to worry about that.
Wow.
Like
that's what we're calling this episode, right?
No, 100%.
Yabba Yabba Don't. So good.
Like whatever it needs to retain enough elements so that it can still be called.
Right. I mean as long as like you have and you know I can definitely picture Channing Tatum looking very uncomfortable in a Flintstones like because basically you're wearing like a muumuu.
I mean to be
yeah, exactly.
And to be fair you could probably like stash a lot of like guns
oh,
and like you know
absolutely.
Like gear
so
inside
can,
of Fred Flintstone costume
and a club for sure
sure
yeah.
Dino muumuu
consider it appreciated.
Okay.
Not enough for a microphone that's how much I'm appreciating it
yeah. But yes, no, I like this idea of just for whatever reason there are things happening at a convention. Dragon Con's the one that the three of us have been to, so we can set it in Atlanta, which is not too far away from Florida.
Right. Like I feel that like if you're in Atlanta, presumably they could get on the horn with this precinct in Florida.
Oh yeah.
And borrow the jewel of the fleet
right.
for no, this no. very special assignment. But let's talk about this for a second, about this reason for why any of this is happening. Like, why on earth would two officers need to go undercover
right.
at Dragon Con? A place that already has...
And specifically, like, cosplay. Because you can go to conventions dressed in civilian
yeah,
clothes
exactly.
and be fine.
Right. I assume it's for the secret underground, like, ring of... Dangerous
oh, yeah, yeah.
parties, may or not,
the,
may, maybe
oh, sure.
eating
the
drugs.
After party.
The after midnight.
Right,
yeah.
right. The like
right.
secret society, you know, just the dangerous,
right.
the underbelly.
See, but like
of
this,
the con.
This is like the jokes write themselves because
also,
you
we,
can.
Yeah, if we don't come back for the next episode, you know who took us out.
Mm. But yeah, but like you can have things like they're going to like the illegal high stakes game of poker, and it's like the dude that is cosplaying as Lex Luthor, and then like the dude that is cosplaying as like Darth Vader, and then the dude that is cosplaying as Voldemort. Like those are the dudes that are having like shit. The evil secret poker game.
But the ringer is Sailor Moon. That's the
case. Oh, yeah, exactly. Right, like the person dressed as like jaded Mario is there too.
I was gonna say Yoshi.
Oh, Yoshi.
Smoking a cigarette in the corner. Like,
right, like right. The, what's like a good, pure, like, yeah, like the really, like really.
Pikachu?
Yeah, like I was going to say, like the really, really foul mouthed Ash Ketchum like hanging out.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, but like, okay, so like, why would they need to kind of assimilate themselves into.
Yeah, like what sort of criminal enterprise is best hidden by convention type, nerd type activities, cosplay, etc.
So it could be something like someone who is participating in like the cosplay contests at one of these conventions has gotten a death threat. And these two people are being sent in as her security. And the only way to kind of guarantee that they can be around her at all times is for them to also enter
to blend in.
The contest.
That's, Miss Congeniality, very.
Yes. But I feel that there needs to be, there might be something more interesting or funnier than that.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of, like, illicit goods, maybe, that... I'm not coming up on interesting things because I think drugs is pretty vague.
But it could be something like that where they arrest some drop off is happening at this convention.
Right.
Like, you know, stolen and plans, drugs, whatever.
And like because the chaos is like a good.
Exactly. A good cover for whatever they're doing.
Right.
And they arrest the cops, before it all starts, arrest two people that they know were going to be involved. And all they know is that, like, they're supposed to meet someone at this convention and they're supposed to be dressed up as Fred and Wilma Flintstone. And that's it. Like, that is the only thing they know. So then it's like, all right, well, the two best guys on the force are going to have to go in dressed up as Fred and Wilma. Because, you know, in order to make the arrest and in order to
sniff
actually,
out
like, whoever has.
Entrap the person who's making the drop or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. Man. They could get confused if there's like a Fred Flintstone Deadpool and stuff.
Oh, man. That's great.
Right. There could be like, oh, God. But like, that's kind of smart, though, because they're characters that aren't that common.
Yeah.
But if you saw someone cosplaying as them, you wouldn't necessarily kind of look askance. You'd just kind of be like, oh, somebody came dressed up as Fred Flintstone.
Classic.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Hashtag Throwback Thursday.
Right.
This is actually like a not terrible criminal idea in that way. It's kind of a terrible criminal idea in lots of other ways.
Because you're bringing things through through a security checkpoint.
Yeah.
And like, there are cops all around at conventions.
Right. Although presumably it could be easy to manufacture some big distracting event.
Oh, sure.
You could just kind of be like, Will Wheaton just showed up, and have everyone just flock to the other side of the room.
Right.
That'd be fun. Or like, you know, easy to like stuff something inside a lightsaber.
Right, there's like a lot of opportunity for things being hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's dig in a little bit now deeper, though, into who are these people? And also kind of like, what is the metaphor of it all? Kind of like, what is the growth that these two people need to go through? That going through a convention.
Will facilitate.
Yeah.
The cops.
Right. Well, I think, and we're going with like a Channing Tatum type, and
not necessarily,
we could be, but yeah.
It actually brings to mind. There's an episode. I think I made you watch this of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, where on Halloween, two of the officers go undercover at a party, and one of them really likes it and is so down to wear a costume and like eat a bunch of candy and stuff, and the other officer hates it.
Yeah.
And you know the journey that they need to go through isn't like to learn to have fun and enjoy Halloween, but it's just like to learn to appreciate your friends who bring enthusiasm into your life.
Yeah. I think that in my original very fast, very sketchy, definitely drawing on tropes pitch, I was pitching two people that were like, the guy was somewhere between Channing Tatum and The Rock.
Yeah.
And the girl was somewhere between Clarice Starling and Judy Hopps from Zootopia. Just kind of like someone that is just kind of like a physically imposing.
No, you pitched Rosa Diaz.
From Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Yeah. And then sort of like a really, really sort of like gung-ho, intense.
Right.
And sort of neither of them understand anything that's happening here.
Right. For different reasons.
For different reasons, yeah.
One, for reasons of this is all of the like dorky kids who I used to like put their head in toilets when I was in middle school. And one for reasons of probably like these were all...
because my name is Vin Diesel.
No, and one for reasons of like these were all the kind of things that I never quite understood, even though I may have perhaps felt a little bit of a call to it. And like, you know, and like...
Mm-hmm. Just are like never felt quite welcome, or that like it was a thing I could do and still have friends in other social circles.
Exactly.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. It'd be interesting if like, because I know that Vin Diesel has done like some dorky con stuff. If like the super hard, intense, bulky rock type dude is very into this.
Right.
Right. I find that entertaining. And then like ladies all business.
Hmm.
I don't know. I could be coerced into either direction. Like I don't really have a strong
attachment. it could be two guys, it could be two ladies.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess my question is like, what are they like out, like what do they want? And how is, I just think in this seems like it's sort of like turning out to be something of a like procedural, maybe a little bit of an action movie. Like it's like at risk for being a shallow movie. And so I guess like what are the like the depth of these people that like we can plumb?
You know, Zach, I've had it as a goal in my life to one day write something where the critic blurb is undeniably lightweight but breathlessly entertaining. I think that this could be undeniably lightweight but breathlessly entertaining.
What did you read that from? That
nothing from my brain.
From your brain, yeah. No, I mean, like, what are James Bond movies for?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, but I hear what.
And
you're...
I've been a bad host. We're about to the 5-minute warning, guys.
Oh great!
My God. Yeah. Holy crap!
Oh, we need to book. Okay, great.
Okay. So
no, but I hear what you're saying though. Of once you kind of look past the specificity of, it's funny because people who don't fit in at a con are going to a con, and cons are just. Especially sort of ones that are really geared towards fandom interaction, the way the Dragon Con is, are just larger than life and very kind of ebulliently, contagiously joyous places.
Yes.
Once you get past that and you need to kind of look at what is the metaphorical journey that these people are going through, and what is the thing that if you took them out of a con and plugged them into an amusement park or plugged them into a concert or plugged them into some other big event that is the conduit...
Yeah.
What is the growth that they need to have, and what is the journey that they need to have? And I think that a lot of cop movies, thinking about kind of the Zootopias, thinking about the like Hot Fuzz, thinking about all of these kinds of cop comedy hybrids, a lot of the time it comes down to you need to kind of stop and smell the roses a little bit. Mm-hmm. You need to kind of...
slow down and appreciate where you are. And I think the interesting thing about cons is that like it is a sense of people coming together to be a community for something that they don't normally do in their day-to-day day job life.
Yeah.
And so having two people who maybe don't feel like they belong or sort of feel like maybe they're on the outside looking in, and going through this experience and realizing they can have community in all kinds of interesting different ways is an arc that we don't have time to tease out, but it's what occurs to me.
Oh, So here's an idea that might be funny, and it might actually lead to some interesting things. In the like 2 minutes that we have left.
You got three. You're fine.
Oh, great. In that case, I'm going to lean back a little bit. No, but I was just sort of thinking about like, and on top of all of that, you do also have the element of these are two people that are putting on a costume, and these are two people that are inhabiting characters. And no matter that like it's happening in a con space, it is still interesting that...
Oh, performing?
Yeah, like there is always sort of that level of like...
The role play.
Yeah, that's some like it hotness of you're inhabiting a character and there's going to be like a funny divide about how you act between... How you act when you don't have the costume on versus how you act when you do have the costume on.
And needing to act as if you were into something that you might not be into.
Exactly.
Right.
And there's also sort of this like... edge of like you are dressed up as two people who are in love with one another and you are and then the thing that clicked into my brain was like, see, it would be funny though to bring back what we were talking about the gender norms of like the 1960s.
Oh yeah,
they do it, and at a certain point they somehow like become aware of, oh Jesus, halfway through the con they reread the like instructions that they got from the bad guys and they're like, wait a minute, it's supposed to be one guy and one girl dressed up as Fred and dressed up as Wilma, but we just realized that we misread this, and it's supposed to be the guy dressed up as Wilma and the girl dressed up as Fred.
Oh boy.
And now they need to sort of switch places around.
Oh, and all of the ribbing then goes the other way.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's so good. I like that. I like that.
And so then it is sort of a movie about confronting those like gender identities that these characters are bringing from the 1960s into modern day.
I am entertained.
In a more time version of this, we'll finesse how that swap actually happens, because misreading the instructions.
I
love it.
Like, but yeah, but I think that like halfway through there can be that switch, and that then sort of like brings out a new dynamic amongst the characters.
Damn.
And then by the end of it, you can have a car chase, a very slow car chase through the parade going against traffic.
You have a minute.
Oh, my God.
Oh, great. Yeah. Luxury of luxuries. So
imagine the after credits gags.
Tell me more about the after credit gags.
I'm thinking some dancing.
Yeah. More of the poker table.
Yeah, those, like, that's you, right. Yeah, I guess like that is where I think like my interest goes, is like how these people who are used to like muscling their way through situations maybe have to learn to be deferential, or sort of like like sort of bow to status in other ways that they're not used to.
Absolutely. Both with other people and sort
and
of
amongst,
and
themselves.
Amongst themselves.
I like your sort of gender swap thing for sort of motivating some of that.
It's right. Good. Yeah, I just think that like if you have costumes, you kind of need to engage a little bit with the role playing and kind of with that like this is in many ways a self-portrait, and just by switching the costumes around, just having that bring out different aspects of themselves, I think might make a good movie.
That was time.
Hey.
Damn.
Well done. Well done, you guys.
Whew.
I'm very pleased.
So, you know, Sarah, I can't help but notice that with both of your ideas, we have gone the extra mile, by which I mean we have gone the extra mile away from the original
idea. I don't care.
I'm just saying, Gabrielle, this week it was a car. It asked to be driven.
This is true.
Wow.
Sorry.
And you know what? At the end of the day, we can still call it Yabba Yabba Don't. So, I'm happy.
I'm happy too. Like, I think it is interesting that certain ideas we've stayed closer to the original and others we've gone further away. But I think I've yet to hear an idea from any of the three of us that like doesn't in some way honor the curiosity and the weirdness of the core idea. And that's what's important.
I think you're right. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right, guys, we're just going to interrupt the show for a quick second. We promise this is not going to take long at all, and we'll be right back to the show. But we just wanted to take a second to acknowledge and thank you guys so much for all the ratings that have been popping up on the Apple Podcast
and
page.
And especially the
for
reviews.
No Bad Ideas. The reviews are
oh
amazing.
Oh my gosh, they've been so good.
All the people who we've seen sharing the show on Twitter and on social media, it's been amazing. And it's really, really helped the show to find some new listeners these past weeks. And really, really, guys, we really appreciate it. And if you can do it, if you can take, I don't know, how long does
five
it take to
minutes,
leave a review?
1 minute? Two
yeah.
minutes?
5 minutes to leave a review. That's if it's a long review.
Yeah.
It takes like 30 seconds to
appreciate it.
We'll feel really good, you guys.
Seriously. And you'll whisper to the algorithms, the robots will hear you, mm-hmm. and they will be more likely to share the show on platforms like Apple Podcasts or wherever you end up leaving a review. That is definitely the dominant place that people find these things. So,
and you might be wondering, how much of a difference does this really make? It makes a big difference. Huge. Like, you have no idea. Like, so many people across all of our shows, you have no idea how many people tell us that they found it just because it popped up on a list on iTunes.
Or that a friend shared it.
Or that a friend shared it.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing. It's like, if you don't feel like, or maybe you already have left a rating and review, I think the reality is these things spread by word of mouth,
yes.
mostly. Yeah. And so if you find yourself, you know, in a conversation sharing, what have you been listening to lately? I think we would really appreciate it if you let them know about this show. But only if they would enjoy it.
No, and real talk. definitely only if they would enjoy it.
Forcing it on people who definitely won't enjoy
right.
it. That's a bad
if
idea.
If your friend
do.
Is going, you know what I absolutely hate? Shows where people take bad ideas from the internet and try to turn them into good stories.
Maybe it's not for them.
No, but real talk, guys. We don't spend any money marketing this show. We would much rather spend our money doing things like making new shows,
yeah.
like developing new content, making new things, whether they're long form, whether they're sort of like small, fast things like time bombs. We would much rather dedicate our energy there than to buying marketing and ads for this show, which really means that we depend on you guys and that we mm-hmm. are counting on you to help us spread the show, because we think that a lot of people would really, really like it, and we want them to find their way here so that, you know, they can get some bad ideas love in their life.
And who knows? Maybe we'll have guests. Maybe we'll go on tour.
Maybe.
Sky's the limit.
Future could be bright.
But Zach,
with your help,
let me ask you something.
Yes.
What more could somebody possibly do to make sure that we get to that?
What
big,
an interesting
bright,
rhetorical
beautiful
question.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, well, they definitely shouldn't go to nobadideaspodcast.com/support.
Could I have that one more time just to make sure that I
yeah,
don't
yeah.
accidentally?
They absolutely,
I sometimes just type things into a URL bar on my browser.
Right, so if you really want to support the show, you're not allowed to go to nobadideaspodcast.com/support, which will take you to our Patreon page where you can sign up for some sweet rewards and help us reach stretch goals.
Yes.
Ooh.
So that we can keep doing this thing.
I will make sure to not.
And other things.
Do any of that.
Reverse psychology. Mm.
Yeah. Long suffering sigh. but seriously, we want to do this as much as we can for as long as we can. And the way that that'll happen is by growing the friends and community that we've already started to have on Patreon. So if you want to see more things from us, more episodes of No Bad Ideas, more other shows, that is the place to support us.
Yeah. If you become a recurring donor on Patreon, there is no better way to make sure that we can spend more time
yes.
making shows like this one and like our audio dramas.
There is one final thing that you can do, though. And this
Ooh.
Is new.
Yeah.
So we had what we think is an okay idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We might, it might be a bad idea.
It's trending towards terrible.
But
that's
we'll
why it fits.
But it might
but
be
like
a very amusing
bad
idea.
Have already
idea.
Sort of either mentioned to us or tweeted at us bad ideas that they have found of their own, that they were like, that they, you know, I think that it's a great episode for us to do on the podcast. And so, if you would like to sponsor an episode of No Bad Ideas and make the three of us have to reckon within certain decency limits with an idea that you have found on the internet and you would like to hear us turn it into a story, you can email us.
And the email is fearofpublicshame@gmail.com.
Indeed, it is.
That's fearofpublicshame@gmail.com to pitch us a bad idea.
Put sponsor an episode in the in the subject line, and we'll talk about it, and we'll look at what you're proposing and sort of work out the details of it, but. We are interested in bringing in more bad ideas than just the three of us can find. And if you would like to sponsor an episode of the show, it is possible. Email us.
And we are back for the second half of the show, where, as always, we want to, now that we have done kind of a very fun, very silly writing exercise, we want to take things down a couple of notches and just talk about the very real, very kind of big writing circumstances in our lives and just kind of check in
with how everyone is doing.
So yeah, how has writing and creating been these past couple of weeks, guys? We just officially finished.
Yeah, we're out of November now.
Yeah, we are, as we record this, it is December 3rd, so.
A wild ride.
The great writing sprint of November is now over.
Yeah, air quotes.
Right, because you're still writing a novel.
No, it got finished. It's done. And if anybody tells you otherwise, it's a lie. And you can tell them that they're liars. That's finished.
I mean, I think you read that on the internet, Zach. So obviously, it's not
obviously true. A lie. Yeah. And if you read that on someone's Twitter, then it's definitely even more of a lie. That work is finished, and you can tell how finished it is by the fact that it isn't available anywhere.
Yep. Yeah, I was going to say you should just send it to me.
No, you can't. Not how finished it is. It's so finished that you can't even read it anymore. Yep. That's how done it is.
It's in, like, the Disney vault.
You know, because, like, really, a lot of novels, when they're being written, that's only, like, a third of the way through the process.
Right.
Because, you know, then it needs to be edited, and you need to do a cover, and then there's that, like, great collaborative period where, like, people
and then
are reading
the
it.
Posthumous publishing agreement where they won't release it until 50 years after your death.
That's where we are.
Oh, I see.
That's how done this is. No. So I guess that we can hop in for anybody who is deeply confused by what the heck we are talking about, because I haven't listened to other episodes of No Bad Ideas yet. I was doing NaNoWriMo.
Which is, if
National
you haven't heard of that,
Novel Writing Month.
Right.
Which is a writing challenge that a lot of people all over the world do, where in the month of November, they try to write a novel. Or perhaps more accurately, the
goal is to produce 50,000 words.
Correct, which is a sizable chunk of a novel, depending on the genre of the novel. Yeah. And
it might be complete, or it may be a third of the way through. It just depends. But it's a collaborative writing sprint that people all over the world take place in. I've done it and failed. You have done it a couple times now.
Yes. And this is the third time that I've attempted it. And I did not succeed in hitting the 50,000 word mark, much to my chagrin. And
you got close, though.
Yes, but let us not not highlight the public shame in which
I was going to say, how's that shame feel in public?
If we had a bell, we could do the Game of Thrones thing.
Yo, I just happen to have a wimpy bell.
No,
shame.
That's not shame. Santa is shaming you right now, Gabriel.
More like his elves. Oh. They're one bell. Shame.
Yes, no, thank you. I should be shamed because I got up and I stood in the internet and I said, December 1st, 50,000 words of this thing will exist. 50,000 words of this thing do not exist. Let it not also be said that Zach and Sarah have helped me a lot with this project. They have kind of heard a lot of the initial pitches. They helped me with outlines. They've done sort of a lot of work with this thing that I'm now taking on the drafting of. But I only got to, if I remember correctly, about 43,000 and change.
Yeah, that's pretty damn close, though. I'm just and also, how dare you? How dare you?
Yeah, yes.
And let's also just check, if you had written 50,000 words, would you even be done with the book?
No.
No. By what percent would you say, give or take?
So this is a little bit of the problem that I am running.
You're in overwriting
into.
City?
I am in overwriting city.
Oh man, I know it's that expensive there.
I've lived there before.
No, and like, so there's a lot of things that are contributing to how slowly this is going. And one is just that I am in overwriting city. I have written all over the outline just because there were certain days. Ooh. When I was, yes, which is,
you don't do that.
I don't, it happened out of desperation.
All right.
Just because the first chapter refused to die.
Mm-hmm.
And the first chapter, it is now over, but that first chapter where every person had to be introduced and every setting had to be described and everything had to just kind of be mm-hmm. explained and introduced to the audience got to be comically long.
Mm-hmm.
I think it ended up being almost 10,000 words by itself, means that it will need to become about half as long as it is.
Challenge accepted.
In the near future. But I also just sort of found that because of that, and because every single day of writing it was just sort of this feeling of, this is going to be a lot of explaining things instead of a lot of advancing the plot, it got really daunting and really exhausting to kind of keep chipping away at it. Especially in days when I was kind of realizing, God, I'm not going to have a nice, steady 3.5 hours to dedicate to this.
Right.
I'm going to need to write for 45 minutes and then just go and do something else. Because a lot of work happens, because a lot of kind of different life things happened. I ended up taking a trip back home to Costa Rica that I wasn't expecting to take at the beginning of the month to help out with some family matters. And because of that, there were a lot of days where it was kind of like, I cannot go back to the salt mine that is chapter one.
I see.
But I also need to write something. Yeah, so right. I'm going to go and write this snatch from later in the book. I'm going to go and grab this from there.
Out of order.
No, and it's been very, very disconcerting, and it's been very, very odd for me because I generally just like start at the beginning and plow forward.
Prose is different.
It is.
It's, you know, and I imagine you're finding a different workflow and that like different modes of thinking help you with prose that, you know, would be extraneous in script writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm definitely just also finding how much I do need to switch my gears from sprinting to marathon. Just in terms of like, I noticed that like on days when I was writing, when like I was able to say write like every day for 3 days, on the third day I got started that much faster.
Sure.
And it was just sort of like more continually in gear. Whereas if I ended up having to like not write for like 4 days, on the fifth day, even if I was in the middle of a scene that I knew where everything was going to go, it took me forever to get back into it, which is the opposite of what happens to me with script writing, where usually I can kind of like jump in and then just produce a lot very quickly. I'm finding that it's an entirely different set of muscles when writing on something that is actually novel-shaped.
I think it's cool that you took on the challenge and that, you know,
thank you.
Absolutely.
Went outside of your comfort zone or sort of like the usual business as usual sort of thing.
Thanks.
I don't know. I guess, is there something that you feel like you've learned that is like this show shaped?
Books are hard. I learned that before, like the before and the after. Before November, Gabrielle, books are easy, man. Scripts are hard. Books that you don't even need to have actors to them. You can just write them and they're done. Mm. That's so easy. After November, books are the hardest thing in the world. You don't even get actors to come in and make them sound good. They need to be like finished on their own. That's so hard. Do you have any idea how it hard that sucks. Is, Zach?
Oh, yeah, man.
It's so hard.
Man.
No, and I think that I am just also becoming more and more aware of how much you need to kind of learn to respect a project and give it its own time and let it educate you in how long some things are going to take and let it educate you in like how much effort and how much space something is going to take up. And even if you are kind of going into it with this like idea of I have all the story beats mapped out, I know everything that is going to happen, it can still surprise you and kind of going, no, actually, like this is going to take about three times as long as you think it is. Even if you know all the twists and turns, when you actually have to like write it out and when you actually have to put it down, it is going to take that much longer. And you are not going to be able to accurately predict how quickly you're going to be able to move through a story until you've actually like written some of the story, until you're actually like on the road itself.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think like, especially for prose, you need to find that sort of, whether it's a narrator or a character, that like point of view voice that will help you, you know, that is your guidepost along that road. And that takes, you can't do anything but write it out.
Yeah, and I think that there's just also a lot of continually discovering new aspects of it and a lot of continually discovering new challenges. Even something as simple as every time that a new character shows up, you need to not only be worried about what are their motivations and what are they saying, you then also need to start to think about how does their dialogue look visually different right. on the page versus another person's dialogue? Because if you're writing in script, you can put a little bit of those affectations into the script itself, but a lot of the times you can just kind of go, well, I know at what pace Michelle Agresti is going to say this, right. and I know at what pace Noah Mazur is going to say the
Scotty
other part
Shoemaker
of it.
Scotty Shoemaker, an italicized world, I know what he'll do with it.
Right.
But if you, italics and books are a whole different bag.
Yeah, and kind of thinking about how do you convey nervousness on the page without just writing continually, she said nervously,
right?
Which gets tiring after the 25th time that you read it in a single chapter. Yeah, and so there is kind of a lot of finding the voice of the book, and then there are sort of like all these micro challenges of figuring out the voice and the presentation of the characters visually as you write.
Well, you are on your way.
Yes.
Which is a good thing.
I think that the new goal, well, actually the realistic goal is to evaluate once we are working on a new thing that we're going to be doing in December, which we'll talk about in a little bit, maybe. But I'm hoping to have a full draft of it done by very early in the new year. And we'll see how that goes after December is done. Dramatic music.
How about you, Sarah?
Mysterious. Yeah. Well, I have been playing in the same world as Gabrielle, but
that's right.
And to be specific, like in the world of the story that
yes,
fictional world.
That fictional universe, not writing a secret novel,
yeah. And not the world of just like despair and crippling self doubt.
We play there.
Sarah doesn't go there.
That's just
anytime.
A given, though.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I live.
That's where we're broadcasting from.
We are in a basement. But no, I sort of took on the challenge of conceptualizing and with a lot of help from Gabrielle and good advice from Zach, creating sort of like a season outline for a podcast and sort of thinking through all of the characters and what the story is even about, which is, oh, that sucks.
Yeah. And the idea, again, is that the thing that I'm writing and the thing that you're writing are kind of equal twins.
Yes, they are...
cousins, as it were.
Sure.
And you don't need to consume both of them, but they will inform each other in interesting and fun ways.
That's the dream.
That's the dream.
I've read the outlines. It's like a little bit more than a dream.
I mean, but like, and we sort of had, when we were talking about this, we sort of had like, this is going to kind of be like a ramped up version of Change of Mind, which is its own story in the Wolf 359 universe and kind of needs to stand on its own, but also should complement and like feed into what happens with Loveless in season 4. And that was really hard. This is even harder. And so a lot of my November wasn't producing pages or word. I don't know what my word count is. I think I only have like 20 pages.
Only, she says.
But I mean, you know me. my thesis was 160.
Wow.
But with footnotes.
Still, mine was like,
well, you were
90,
writing a script,
and it was like mostly empty space.
You were writing a script.
Quick sidebar, just out of curiosity, can you guys think of any time, probably when we were writing Wolf 359, did we ever write an outline that was longer than the finished thing? Because
I don't,
Sarah and I, we write long outlines.
We do write long outlines. I don't think I ever broke. I know I did. If you fold in the outline and all of the pre-writing I did for Let's Kill Hilbert, which was a lot, it might get real close.
Sure. Okay.
Wow.
End of sidebar.
Yeah. But yeah, so there is a sort of general overview of the series's identity. There are detailed character biographies. There is a season outline that exists. And all of that feels great. What I'm nervous about is like, I still don't feel like I have it. Like I sort of still feel like I need to situate the baseball in my hand before I can throw the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Like I still think I'm like, I need to do a little bit more work to have a grip on it. And I don't know if that's just me being nervous because like there is no one to tell me like, no, you're good, go forth. Or whether, you know, the questions in my brain are good questions. So like, that's one thing that I'm not happy about ending November with. And then the other thing is like, I just spent a lot of time and mental energy on this and other projects that we will talk about later. and like kind of let the balance get uneven and a lot of the rest of my life get stressful. And sort of realizing that like, I kind of have this very precarious, balanced knife's edge on which I live. And like, if I lean too far in one direction, other things get very sharp and pointy. And like, I sort of had a moment towards the end of November, was like, oh, I went a little too hard on this and I should have given more time to take care of myself. And so like, that's sort of where I am at the end of November. Is I have exactly what I set out to have by the end of it, which is, you know, sort of a blueprint to, like, I can go start writing the pilot for this show right now. I think we're going to do a little bit more work on it before I do that. But I just sort of don't feel content or proud of it. So hooray!
Let me ask you something about, and sidebar, I think that we are all feeling that knife's edge in our own ways.
Totally. Oh,
and yeah. I think that we all, like, live on it, and at times we are leaning away from it, and at times we are leaning into it. But yeah, like I think that we can all sympathize with that and with how
I think that is a common experience.
Yeah, which is not to take anything away from it from how difficult it is to suddenly feel like you are leaning into the edge of it. But let me ask you something about feeling like you have it, which is when you started writing, not doing editing, but doing like actual writing on Wolf 359. When did you feel like you had it? You're not allowed to say season four. You're not allowed to say when the final episode was
final. When I listened to the final episode, yeah.
No. Unless that is the genuine to God answer.
The honest to God answer is probably, I felt like I had it when I definitely when I listened to Minkowski Commanding, which is the second episode that I wrote. I was like, okay, this is good. I can do this. Like I Let's Kill Hilbert was, which is the first episode I wrote, was like the first proper script I had ever written for anything. And I just felt like I flubbed it. And that like it was mostly like I don't understand how that episode exists or didn't. But yeah, when I got through writing the second one, I was like, okay, I think I have a handle on this. And sure. It was definitely this. I definitely had a handle on the characters because I had been editing it for a while anyway. But like the process and sort of having my mind around story structure, that took just a little bit of extra. And of course, having it means you can lose it. And there were definitely episodes later in season three and season four where I was just like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
I'm very much intensely in a cycle of feeling like I have it and like I don't have it with this novel that I'm wrestling with right now. Because I sort of earlier in the year had written a prologue that I hated.
Yeah.
And then at the start of November, I wrote a different version of it. And I was like, yes, feeling good, I've got this. And then chapter one happened, and now I intensely feel like I don't got this.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens as, you know, as I keep trudging forward. But it is sort of a lot of kind of like holding on to the feeling when you feel like you can do it.
Yeah.
And then sort of looking back at that during the days when you feel like you can't do it. But it's tough when you're building up to that first moment of, yeah, oh no, it's going to be okay. Like, it is, this is something that, like, I've got.
Yeah.
It can be really tough to get to that point. And I feel that for me, we were able to do Wolf 359 because that period of feeling like I didn't have it was abridged because we got to the point of rehearsing with actors so quickly.
Right.
And I think around the time that we did, like, episode two, and I heard you and Emma and Michaela go through it, that was kind of around the time that I was like, there's rough edges here. We're going to be fine.
Sure, sure.
Like, there's a lot to work on. But there is something about putting these three people and in a sonic room together, and that's okay.
You also wrote, like, the quote-unquote show Bible in a day. So, like, yeah, all of the conceptual work was kind of done very quickly, and then you had a partner come on board very quickly.
Right, and then yeah, it was like, oh shit, I need to actually like go back, yeah, and do all of the conceptual work properly now.
Right. Yeah. What? But like,
but there was kind of a very loose proof of concept at the very beginning.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, sort of we have been talking about this in some form or another for months now, and I'm sort of feeling how tortured that is. And so maybe the answer is to jump right in, or maybe it is to like continue to sort of interrogate and get to that spark of confidence, which I had a couple times while I was writing, but eludes me now.
I think that we've also just been very spoiled by how quickly we moved on Wolf 359.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as much as that, you know, was very, very stressful, and as much as it led to sleepless nights and to, you know, stomach problems.
literal
stomach problems. It was a blessing to kind of have something where it was iterating that quickly and we had to kind of produce things because nothing helps to chase away kind of that feeling of like this, I don't know how to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like number one, literally having to make it happen.
Yeah.
Right.
And number two, seeing it happen and sort of hearing people do something with it and
yeah,
kind of going like, it's fine. It's not perfect, but it's there.
Yeah.
And that was as much as we often sort of talk about how stressed out we were for the entire 3.5 years we were making that show. It was a very real blessing for our kind of artistic, I don't know what you call it.
I suppose.
Having read the outlines that I was sent, I think you're probably in a much better place than you feel.
Okay.
I was curious to ask if there was sort of any insight. It sounds like you dealt with something that I also dealt with in a different, you know, in your way of balance and this question of balance with creativity and then also, you know, the rest of our lives.
Obligations and like also living life.
Yeah. And I guess I'm just curious if there's anything that you feel like you took away last month that you're bringing forward into this month.
Well, one, I need to be better. and two, I think...
And in better, like better to yourself, better...
Better to myself, better at, I think I always follow the lure of doing quote unquote creative things before I you know, take other parts of my life seriously. And I think what I want to try to do in December is sort of be more, more rigid about my time. Because what I found, not just in November, but a lot of this year, is that like I have a really wonderful, flexible remote job that I can kind of can do whenever. But that has allowed me to sort of blend everything in my life into this like gray mush where like I'm never not working, but or I'm never not on. So I kind of want to establish like on and off times where like, okay, this is writing time. This is creative time. And if, you know, what happens is you watch dog documentaries on Netflix, then
that show
that it's really good. Then, you know, that's a problem for you because there's no more, you can't just push writing time into work time now.
Exactly.
And I want to,
like, and have firmer boundaries.
Trying to establish firmer boundaries and also just like have built in like leisure time. Like this is not part of the creative process. This is just you doing things for you.
Yeah.
I really, really struggle with that.
It's really hard. And it's something I want to try and like not get perfect at. I don't think that's a realistic goal, but just be better at.
I love what you're saying. Just like that gray mush is my entire existence. As, like, right. Since like,
so you can never escape the stress.
Not being at a company where I was, you know, just showing up and doing my job and then leaving and then being done.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, with, I guess my version of the remote is the freelance stuff, which is then like not only doing the job, but making sure there's another job after the job,
right?
While also doing the things that I would love to be my actual job, but like won't be unless I do them as if they were my job.
Right.
So I can really relate to that. And I love the idea of firmer boundaries. That's definitely been a theme in therapy. I guess I'm curious, just actually scheduling out time sounds like the sort of like fly on the wall.
Right.
Like,
and I know myself well enough to know that like if I make a color coded Google calendar, I won't listen to it. Like there's no consequences for me.
I see.
Yeah. I'll ignore that. So I think just like starting out with like, I do my money job work Monday through Friday, no more weekends.
Right.
And, you know, maybe sort of having like, you know, I do creative things when I go out to Bushwick with you guys, and you know, have specific hours in the evening for me, but like that's it.
Yeah.
You know, no getting up early to try and pound a bunch of stuff out because
before
like,
work, right?
Yeah. It's just stuff like that. So I'm kind of working on the accountability for it, because I know if it's just like stuff in a diary or things I set up for myself, I'll ignore that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, if there's any way to use us to hold you accountable, please.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
Cause I'm also in a zone of that.
Word.
And wanting to sort of, I guess the idea is like sandboxing, Because otherwise, sand gets in everything if it's not in the box.
What about you, Zach? How was your November?
Yeah.
It was a ride.
I think November was the coalescence of too many S's.
Mm-hmm. Yay!
Never had that problem before.
Nope. And like just starting from like kind of day one through the end of it, and it definitely lightened up as it went. I think I started out kind of heavy with all of that travel. And yeah, running Risegrave Ember was definitely more work than I expected in the admin side of like, so much of the time that I'd sort of budgeted for scripts became making sure that the emails were going out.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you know, just, you know.
Right. Handling the brick and mortar of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So that was interesting. And I think my desire to have many, many finished scripts ready became having many, many script ideas ready.
Okay.
Which I'm down with. Like, I love, like, yeah, especially like when it comes to the YouTube videos that I do, I think there is something to like sort of looser formats and also just having a glut of ideas that mm-hmm. I can then like slash most of and just take the best out of. So I feel good about that. I am blown away by some of the people who did write a script in November.
That's awesome.
There's one person who wrote an entire season of an audio drama.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
Like, yeah,
that is so cool.
Blows
that's,
me away.
That's awesome.
So I feel good about how I spent the time.
Mm-hmm.
Even if there's part of me that would have loved to be more of a Risegrave Ember participant than I think
that
I
you
ended
were allowed
up
to be.
Sort of, yeah, having the time for. I can live with that for sure. I think I am like in this spot this month now, where I've sort of like put, I don't know about a gun to my head, but I've sort of like set myself up to fulfill on a promise that I had to myself after, being laid off from 1 month, which is to try my hand at this online educator game,
mm-hmm.
which I'm so excited to be doing with the two of you.
Yeah.
We can finally reveal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Zach, do you want to do the honors? What are we doing?
Please.
Be delighted.
Please.
Basically, we're teaching a workshop on how to write for the radio.
and it's going to be an online class.
That's right.
Yeah. Something that folks will be able to access.
Take on their own time.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully all over the world.
Will be of use. Yeah.
And yeah, it's just like really exciting to go from a job where I was like behind the camera and sort of like setting up all the facility to do, you know, like mm-hmm. build a studio and like all of that, at 1 month, which was an incredible experience, and feeling a little bit like I could do that, and wanting an excuse to do it. And
now we're going to see if the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
Or if we can't do it. No, I'm kidding. Of course we can do it. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about it, y'all.
I really am too. So doing that and then also working on an email course with one of the former 1 month teachers, like an email marketing course,
mm-hmm.
Which I feel maybe like a little bit less like sort of ready to kick ass on. But also, I'm excited to do, cause that is, how I survived after being laid off from 1 month. Thanks. In no small part to you, Sarah, when mm-hmm. you came over and we just like sent out like hundreds of emails.
Yep. Spreadsheets for days.
Yeah. So I think I share the feeling that I think you guys have sort of brought to the table of feeling behind, but also I think feeling like I am behind in the races that I've been dying to be in finally.
Okay.
And so even if I'm not winning, I feel like there is a win in being in the race.
Right. And being okay. in the right stadium.
Yeah. Or at least on the right road to the stadium with right. other people.
Sure.
In the like column of humans heading in that direction.
Now, if only that stupid streetlight would go from red to green, and then we could really get going.
Look, at least I'm not running in the opposite direction in the Dragon Con.
Right. the parade. Costume parade. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Right. That's great, Zach, though. Yeah.
It's one of those things. It's like, I think there's a non-zero amount of frustration for not being done already, which mm-hmm. not new. Hashtag impatient. But there is, I think, a good feeling of being on the hook for the things that I've been, you know, sort of like, you know, I don't know about my money, but like if time is money, I've put my money where my mouth is. But, you know, right. just like, sure. Yeah.
And you have set yourself up in a situation where if you didn't make these things happen, there would be some amount of shame in a public forum.
In a public place.
Which should
yeah.
make you afraid.
Quiver.
No, and I think that goes for all of us. Like, as much as we've sat around and talked about how writing a novel is hard and how it can be really, really tough to grasp a new sort of long project that you're not quite sure how to get a hold of, and you're sort of talking about all of these different ventures that you are finding it tough to find the time to properly service. It is undeniably awesome to be doing these things.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it's kind of in the, like, if we're in the early scary stages of doing all these things when we're kind of looking around and the thing is more not happening than happening, it is still really, really awesome to be able to sit here and kind of go, but we're doing it. Like, the blood, sweat, and the tears. Maybe not all of it, but it's going into that project. Like, it is going into that. It isn't just us working at a McDonald's somewhere, idly thinking about one day.
Right.
Right. And I think that that's one of the things that, like, having moved into this apartment and, like, spent all this time and, like, you know, savings, like, building a studio, I feel like I'm finally, like, delivering on the promise of having a studio, like, using the studio, as opposed to just, like, sitting here being like, well,
mm-hmm. yeah.
gulp. Like, I hope I'm, like, you know, still here next year and not, like, moving out and then losing the facility.
Right.
So it's just like, while I have it, while we're, you know, in this sort of the eye of the storm, so to speak, in having, you know, like, time to make it happen. Yeah. I don't know. That feels good.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, on the other side of things, on maybe the more personal side, I've just been watching my cat sort of circle the drain in a way. Her breathing's gotten a lot worse.
Mm.
And as I am so busy and feel like I'm not able to, like, make as much time for her as I think she mm-hmm. once wanted when she was more energetic. You may hear her snoring with her snot-filled sinus off in the corner. But yeah, just like, I definitely have felt like some weight of inevitable mortality in many senses of that word, but also just like watching this little one grow old.
Yeah,
has definitely given me some feels that continue into December as it grows colder. Yes,
and the nights grow darker. Yeah, I've definitely had that a little bit to this year with, like, it is very exciting that we are embarked on the ventures that we are embarked on. I am excited to make them happen. I'm also, as I'm getting closer to a birthday, sort of, and, like, my friends who were in law school are now sort of graduating, and my friends who were in med school are becoming doctors. I'm sort of getting to the place of, like, ooh, I'm coming to a juncture and I'm going to have to make a choice very soon. And I'm nervous about that because I don't know the answer right now about whether, you know, to sort of try and balance in the middle or whether jump into one side or the other. So I hear that and I sympathize about time management.
If you think Sarah should jump into side A, dial 111-543.
Oh,
no, yeah.
Cast your vote now.
Trouble is, they don't know what side one is.
I know.
Yeah. But I think that, like, you've always sort of been a kind of person to have multiple irons in the fire at all times. That's sort of part of how, at least I think of you, is like doing a bunch of things. And they all sort of relate to you. And so just don't be so hard on yourself about having lots and lots of commitments, man.
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm committed to is not stretching myself too thin. Mm-hmm. Because I definitely think that there were some points this year where I started cashing in on, you know, my health and, right. And sort of well-being in order to just like do it all. And I think a lot of the things that, it's important for me to acknowledge my privilege to have the, you know, just the parents that I had and sort of the opportunities that I've had to be able to be somebody who can afford to keep a lot of irons and a lot of fires. I think I definitely leveled up this year as a freelancer, in terms of valuing my time, in terms of like the clients that I'm working with, in terms of the, just like the things that I'm like doing to survive. I feel like I went from like kind of really struggling, to kind of less struggling, but I'm still That's not awesome. Out of the struggle woods. Struggle is real. And I appreciate that. And God bless, my roommates and my partners, romantic and otherwise, that, deal with the insecure version of me that doesn't make it to the microphone, or the under the ocean part of the iceberg of the insecure Zach, I don't know if imposter syndrome is exactly the right thing, but just, I feel like I have a really supportive community, and that makes a huge difference. Future. This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.